instead of treating the healthcare systems like a machine, thinking that every site should function identically if you apply the same protocol, I think we really have to remember that rural systems behave more like an ecosystem or a network. They're highly interconnected and very sensitive to disruption. So I don't think rural quality improvement can just be about compliance or rigid standardization. I think it has to be about adaptability, resilience, and designing systems that actually work for local conditions.
Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytane and Tsintiaan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Today we're returning our focus to rural medicine and the core healthcare quality dimension of equity. Previous guests on this podcast have spoken about the geographical challenges that patients living in rural areas encounter when they need to access healthcare services. But healthcare inequity starts on a much deeper structural level, which could be better understood from a global health system delivery perspective. And that's the interest of today's guest, Dr. Navpreet Sidhu, a rural emergency room and primary care physician and the physician lead of Northern Health Spreading Quality Improvement Program. Welcome, Nav. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Cher, and thanks for having me on this podcast.
That's quite all right. Now, I wonder whether you can start by you telling us a little bit about yourself, perhaps where you practice, and a little bit about your journey into medicine.
Definitely. So as you mentioned, my name's Navpreet Sidhu. I'm a rural emergency medicine working currently in Northern BC. And I grew up in Prince George in a hardworking Sikh immigrant family. My parents are originally from Punjab. And it's hard to encapsulate my entire career thus far, but what I can say is I graduated from the University of Alberta in terms of medical school, and I did my residency in Prince George. And since then, I've worked in like a number of rural small communities, including Mackenzie, Fraser Lake, Hazelton, Terrace, Fort Nelson. And honestly, I've been really transformed by working front lines in those communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also done a lot of work in physician leadership and physician quality improvement. And like you mentioned, I'm the PQI spread lead. And a few years ago, I also completed some global health courses and rotations. And it's really interesting that you brought up the word journey, because I find, I feel like I don't fully know where my path is going to lead me. And I realize, like, over time, there isn't really a final destination in medicine. And so I definitely never imagined that my journey would lead me here onto this podcast talking about sociology. So I'm really appreciative of being on this podcast.
That's funny. And you're right. It's not everyone's primary ambition, particularly in the medical field, to end up talking on a podcast, but here you are.
Yes.
So let's turn to the subject of global health delivery. And where did that interest first develop for you?
So I think probably in medical school, like I really wanted to expand my horizons in medical school and serve underserved populations. And like a lot of like medical students and physicians, I think early on, you really think medicine is like practice in action. So diagnosing disease, treating problems, delivering care. And at that stage, I didn't really care or spend a lot of time thinking about social theory or the system surrounding healthcare. And I honestly thought those conversations were more for like philosophy majors or anthropology majors, like people in the ivory tower rather than on the ground. And my perspective really changed when I had the opportunity to take the Global Health Delivery course as organized through Harvard University. And that course introduced me to some medical anthropologists, namely Arthur Kleinman and Paul Farmer, and who I also had the privilege of being taught under. And so they really brought together medicine, anthropology, and social theory. And their main thing is to use these concepts to rethink ideas around health equity and social justice. And that really changed like how I saw medicine. And so I started realizing like the outcomes that we're seeing are shaped less by medicine itself and more by how healthcare is really delivered. And so when you look at this biosocial approach, you just really highlight that people are doing the best they can within systems that were never really designed to meet the realities they're working in. And you quickly realize you can't separate medicine from like housing, geography, or poverty, transportation, all of these things that really affect us. And so I'd say my interest now is really bringing in disciplines like anthropology, sociology, psychology, history, and political economy into conversations about healthcare quality and delivery. Because I think if we combine these perspectives with clinical medicine, then we can build systems that are not only effective, but also humane. So I think that answers that question.
Yeah, that's an incredible journey. And global health delivery, it does sound very broad. It does sound very complex. It's a difficult thing to get your head around, I think, at a high level. I mean, you talked about some interesting terms there. How can the ordinary person or physicians, how can we begin to understand maybe the pros and cons of different healthcare delivery systems, and including our own here in Canada?
Yeah, so there's quite a few concepts I learned about, and I just wanted to touch upon maybe like two or three of them, and that'll kind of help describe, or that'll kind of help answer your question. So the first one that really stuck out to me actually comes from sociology, and that's the idea that reality is socially constructed. So when I was in my Harvard course, I read about two fascinating authors called Peter Berger and Thomas Luckman. And they argue that what we consider quote unquote normal is often shaped by institutions, culture, and repeated social practices rather than being purely objective truth. And so if you look at healthcare through that lens, you kind of see it everywhere. Like, so for example, like a lot of our standards, protocols, and quality metrics are designed around larger systems that have larger hospitals or subspecialty access, advanced diagnostics, and dense infrastructure. But in rural medicine, many of those assumptions built into those systems can break down very quickly. And I just want to acknowledge here and to the audience, I'm not trying to make a dichotomy between urban and rural, like saying that one is better than the other. I'm just highlighting some differences. So like a very distinct example would be like a provincial guideline might recommend rapid outpatient imaging follow-up, such as like an MRI or certain subspecialty follow-up. But in Northern BC, diagnostics can be very limited to certain communities, and patients may have to travel hundreds of kilometers to get an MRI or a specialty appointment. Like I can see patients traveling hundreds of kilometers just to get groceries. So it's important to realize that we as rural clinicians often make different decisions around admission, imaging, or treatment thresholds, not because we don't understand best practice, but we are adapting best practice to the structural realities in front of us. And so that was one concept. And then the other concept that I found to be super interesting and applicable was from a sociologist named Max Weber. And he wrote about how modern societies have become increasingly bureaucratic and rule-driven. And bureaucracy isn't inherently bad because it allows larger healthcare systems to function, for sure. But he also warned about something called, quote, like the iron cage. And this idea is that like systems, rules, and administrative processes can slowly become disconnected from the realities of everyday human life. And so when I was working in Hazelton, for example, you know, there was a process or protocol that was kind of like promoted by Northern Health, but it really was designed for like a busier, larger hospital. And it didn't translate well to, you know, a small community hospital where there's only one or two nurses working and staffing is very limited. So then you can kind of see in this approach like how systems designed for efficiency at a larger scale unintentionally create like a lot of administrative burden or barriers to good care. And that's exactly like what the Global Health Delivery course was about. It's about you know, tying this all together and just kind of looking at it from a larger perspective. What the Global Health Delivery course really talked about was the biosocial model, where it's like illness isn't really purely biological. illness is shaped by society, economics, politics, geography, history, trauma, and culture. So a classic example they usually use is malaria. So biologically, malaria is caused by Plasmodium infection transmitted by mosquitoes, and there's a certain treatment that you give. But then you could also talk to an epidemiologist who might focus on mosquito breeding grounds or drainage systems. And you might also talk to an anthropologist who may focus on poverty or labor conditions or land distribution or housing instability that may increase exposure risk. So all these perspectives on how to treat malaria have merit because they're like different layers of the same problem. And we can even see that, closer to home, like if you look at Vancouver downtown East Side, issues like addiction, HIV, and severe mental illness can't really be understood purely through biomedical lens. Like, especially for downtown East Side, you have to look at like historical policy decisions, housing systems, institutional trauma, economic stigma, all of those things. So I'm really trying not to like discount the biomedical model, but I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned was that healthcare problems often have like multiple valid ways of understanding what the problem actually is.
Well, thank you for explaining that, and thank you for that perspective. Really introducing that concept of social determinants of health and how that's wrapped into healthcare and health in general. Now, you gave us some examples there, but how do these concepts, those two concepts they say you mentioned, relate to inequity in healthcare delivery in rural communities in particular, such as those we see in northern BC? You've given us some examples. I wonder whether you can give us some more examples.
Yeah, and I think for the audience that doesn't really know the vastness of northern BC, I can give a few interesting facts of like the sheer scale. So for a bit of context, like an interesting fact is that Northern Health serves over 300,000 people, but it's spread across 600,000 square kilometers. And so that's, the size of like France almost. But the population is only the size of like a mid-sized Canadian city. So I think right away, like geography and weather are like one of the biggest determinants of health. And it promotes a lot of inequity and structural barriers to care for our patients because of the difficulty of like accessing healthcare. And so, yeah, like you said, I've talked kind of about how those concepts kind of apply to rural health. So I want to be a little bit more positive and talk about like a positive example of how we can overcome these barriers. So I found really interesting when I was researching, other healthcare delivery systems, I found that innovation and the ability to be agile was very important. So instead of being reactive and like trying to put out fires all the time, being proactive and creating innovative solutions was really important for communities. So for example, attending dialysis is really hard for rural patients, especially Indigenous communities, because they have to, leave their communities for 3 days out of the week to attend a dialysis appointment. And it creates a lot of emotional, cultural, financial consequences. So there are actually programs in different countries that ask a different question. So they ask, instead of asking our patients to adapt to the system, why not adapt the system to the patient? So they've, other countries have looked into mobile dialysis units or portable systems or telehealth connected programs and Indigenous-led renal initiatives. So these are innovative solutions that might have a little bit of more upfront cost, but it actually saves money in the long term and, provides effective care. When we're thinking about rural systems, the need to be adaptive in our thinking, and be very flexible.
Yeah, and thank you for introducing those examples. And there have been many excellent examples of innovative work in rural areas that we've actually showcased on this podcast in the past.
Yes, definitely. I was just gonna say that. I was like, I understand that these examples aren't just limited to the other countries, but in the context of my global health delivery course, these are the examples that I learned about. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, as we're a podcast dedicated to healthcare quality improvement, I mean, let's switch the conversation back to that healthcare quality piece and that perspective. So what do you think this means for healthcare quality, and if we're adopting a quality improvement lens for rural areas? You mentioned the piece about innovation.
Yes. So, like, if you look back at the concepts that we talked about, so the social construction of reality, Weber's ideas about bureaucracy or the biosocial approach, they remind us that what we define as quote unquote good care or quality care is often shaped by institutional assumptions. And many of those assumptions are built around larger, more robust, and well-resourced healthcare environments. So, if a healthcare system kind of defines quality without understanding local context, then we can unintentionally create like impossible standards, like performative metrics and quality improvement fatigue, because you're just never reaching that level of excellence that you're striving for. And it can also lead to moral injury among healthcare workers because they're trying their best in a system that's not really adapting to their local context. A lot of times, what clinicians I feel are faced with are scarcity, workforce gaps, or delayed transfers, lack of diagnostics, administrative burden. And so those are things that we really need to think about when we promote these quality improvement initiatives. So instead of treating healthcare systems like a machine, thinking that every site should function identically if you apply the same protocol, I think we really have to remember that rural systems behave more like an ecosystem or a network. They're highly interconnected and very sensitive to disruption. So I don't think rural quality improvement can just be about compliance or rigid standardization. I think it has to be about adaptability, resilience, and designing systems that actually work for local conditions. And so that's where, again, I found the Harvard course so valuable. So there was many examples in the Harvard course that showed that in a resource-constrained setting, the most successful intervention are rarely the ones that impose like a model from the outside, like a local government or a health authority kind of imposing their solutions. It's more so of building from the ground up. Building on existing strengths and involving those frontline communities in designing the process itself. And so, for example, I think instead of creating one centralized solution and expecting every rural community to follow it, I think we can develop like adaptable rural change packages, whether that be shared tools, transfer pathways, protocols, or implementation frameworks that communities can modify based on their staffing, geography, and resources. Because I don't think the goal is to abandon standards. I think the goal is to contextualize standards. So that way, we can maintain safety, equity, and evidence-informed care, but really give the flexibility to rural communities to adapt protocols based on their local context.
That's interesting, and I think that informs particularly your role on the spreading quality improvement program and initiative there, certainly. And it also reminds me of something. I think it was Ray Markham who said on a previous podcast about the individual needs of every rural community and how they are all different. And I think he said
Yes.
when you visited one rural community, you visited one rural community. So that
Yes,
stuck me
exactly.
with me there.
Yes,
Well,
yeah.
yeah. Well, I'm thinking that having all this insight which you have and this great depth of knowledge about structural health system inequity, you work in a lot of rural centers on a regular basis. You know, there could be a sense of a moral injury in that respect that you might encounter or you might experience because of this knowledge. And I wonder whether that might ever be demoralizing in some way. I mean, how do you stay motivated to keep working in rural healthcare? And how do you continue your quality improvement work and really turn up every day? What motivates you?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question because the burden is so real. So, yeah, definitely I've experienced moral injury. I think it's not just like being tired or overworked or burned out. I think it's just like working in a system where you find it difficult to provide the care at the standard that you want to provide care. And so, what keeps me motivated usually just like remembering that patients aren't on numbers. So I think a lot of times we kind of reduce people to calculations or numbers, and healthcare conversations can become so focused on like efficiency, volume, and then we forget that even though many rural communities are small, they shouldn't be considered insignificant. And so I remember working in a small community where I was like treating a grandma, and on paper, she counts as just one patient, but then she was telling me the story of her life. And in reality, like she's taking care of like 10 grandchildren. She's supporting her neighbors, making the meals. She's preserving like language and culture. She's stabilizing an entire community. And so I think if we only measure human life through volume or productivity, we miss the real value of people. And there is a passage from Viktor Frankl that I find deeply meaningful. So Frankl was like an Austrian neurologist, psychiatrist, Holocaust survivor who survived Auschwitz and later wrote extensively about meaning and suffering. And in his book, so after speaking to the prisoners, he wrote, and I'm just going to quote the whole quote. He wrote, "What I had done was nothing extraordinary. I had simply taken them as human beings and not mistaken them for mechanism to repair. I had not offered them a cheap escape from guilty feelings by conceiving them as victims of biological, sociological, or psychological conditioning. I had taken them as peers. They learned that it was the prerogative of man to become guilty and his responsibility to overcome guilt." And so that quote really stays with me because I think whether we're talking about like global health, rural medicine, addiction, chronic disease, or quality improvement, the danger is that systems can slowly start turning people into problems to be managed. And medicine is best when it's humanizing. So instead of seeing the person just as a diagnosis or the community as just as a metric or, quantifying suffering as the utilization data, I think really seeing our patients as real people. And that's what keeps me motivated. And quality improvement to me is not just about efficiency, it's about dignity. It's about asking how we build systems that allow people to receive care closer to home in ways to honor their lives, their communities, and their context. And I realized that I could have only learned that through my journey of discovering global health, and applying it to my own medical practice.
Wow. Well, thank you for that personal perspective and that patient-centered perspective as well. And that's actually a good place to wrap up the interview today. So thank you again for sharing your own personal North Star on this as well, for joining us, taking us through some of these important and structural factors, which I think are under-recognized. These things that are contributing to rural health inequity, it's given me a new awareness, and many things to think about. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'd also like to acknowledge Christopher Dodge, who's a close friend of mine. He has a master's in sociology and he's been an important mentor to me. And so many of the concepts I've spoken about were shaped through his teaching, guidance, and conversations. So I definitely want to acknowledge him.
Thank you, and that's time well spent. You've been listening to Dr. Napreet Sidhu, a family and emergency physician in Northern BC. And to find out more about today's guest and the subject of today's discussion, please check out the episode show notes and on our website. But until next time, it's goodbye from us here at QualityCast North, our guest, Dr. Napreet Sidhu, and your host. I'm Sher Chiwi. If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chiwi and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chiwi. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.